We're doing Parshat Pinchas. We left off last week in a suspenseful moment. The people of Israel were uniting against Pinchas. The leaders were saying, who's he? What kind of family does he come from? His grandfather was a pagan. He's a descendant of Jethro, the pagan. He's going to kill a leader in Israel, and they're ready to kill him. And then the plague stops, thanks to Pinchas. And Hashem tells Moshe, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron haKohen, Pinchas is going to be rewarded. He will become a Kohen because he stood up in my honor. He was zealous on my behalf. And thanks to him, the Jewish people were saved. It was when he stood up for my honor that the plague stopped. And that's why he is getting a covenant of peace. And for... No. He was not. He was a descendant of a Kohen. And when Aaron was anointed and his son Elazar was anointed, from that moment onward, any children they would have would be Kohanim. Pinchas, who was born beforehand, was left out. So, Pinchas is rewarded by Hashem. And Hashem tells us, Tzaor et ha-Midyanim. We have to view them as our enemies. And then v'kitem otam. So this is interesting. First tsaro, first view them as your enemies. And then go and fight a war. Later on we'll see they actually do that. But that there is a step one, right? You can't just go to war. You gotta first recognize that the other one is the enemy. It's extraordinary that the king of the leader, the king's daughter, Tzur's daughter, Cosby, she was there just to cause them to sin. You see how intent they were on causing us to sin. Next, we have this count. Hashem tells us, tells Moshe to count the Jewish people. And we have a count going through the tribes. We run through that. We're up to Shlishi. We're told that the people who are in that count are the people who will have a portion in the land of Israel. There's a big discussion over here, being that the country was divided in lots. What does the Pasuk mean when it says a larger tribe will get a larger portion? The Pasuk seems to say it goes based on their size, yet we know it was given based on lots. So then what relevance is there to their size? So that's a discussion between Rashi and Nachmanides, whether it means on some level the numbers did count and the lots only took over at another level, or the lots proved that it was all God sent because the larger tribes really received the larger portion. And then the tribe of Levi is counted. And we're told that in this count, it was a fresh generation. No one was left from the earlier generation. We have on tradition that every year at Tisha B'Av night, which was the anniversary for their sin with the spies, every year, all the men who were above the age of 20 at the time of the sin would dig graves. And everyone would go to sleep in a grave. And then the next morning, they would go around and see who got out of their graves. Meaning the way the plague was fulfilled was that every night, everyone went, every Tisha B'Av night, every year on that anniversary, they'd go to sleep in their graves, a very scary thought, and then get up and see who got up. And then came the 40th year, and they did the same thing. And they went to sleep, they got up, and they saw they were all still there. So they said, maybe we made a mistake in the calendar. So they went back down, and same thing again and again, until they realized, okay, God's not taking us. So we then have the story of the daughters of Tzlafchad, who come up and say, our father died, he has no sons, who's going to get his lot? And here Hashem comes in and gives us the rules of inheritance. We have all the laws of inheritance in these short psukim. Amongst them is the laws that when there is no male heir, so then the females do take over the portion as the Torah teaches. And then Hashem tells Moshe, go up Har HaAvarim, you will look into the land of Israel and you will pass away. And Moshe says, who's going to lead the people of Israel? And Hashem tells him, take Yoshua bin Nun. And Moshe is in shock because his own sons were big in Torah. And yet Hashem did not choose his own sons. Moshe purposely brings this up now where Hashem is saying how things stay in the family. So Moshe says, and what about the next leader? And Hashem tells him, okay, take Yoshua. Now here we're taught that Yoshua was faithful. Yoshua was always there studying. And Yoshua was careful to arrange the academy so everyone could come in the next morning and the tables and chairs would be set up. That was his great merit. It wasn't only that he was diligent, always learning. He was also caring that others would be able to learn. And in yeshivot, in the great yeshivot, from 50, 100, 150 years ago, they would sell the right to be the one to clean up the Beit Midrash. Meaning if you weren't one of the top students, you weren't given the right to clean up the Beit Midrash. How do I know this? When I came to MTJ, I saw that Rabbi Feinstein was loading the soda machine. The Rosh Yeshiva was putting the soda cans into the soda machine. So I was in shock. Why is the Rosh Yeshiva putting soda cans in the soda machine? So I called my Rebbe. And I asked him, what's pshat? Like, why is he the one filling the soda machine? And he told me this. He said he must still be from the old school, where it's considered an honor to be the one who cleans up and prepares the academy for others to learn. As we see Yoshua, on top of all his learning, the fact that he was diligent in also taking care that others would be able to learn, that was the merit that caused him to be the next leader, Yoshua bin Nun. And Hashem tells Moshe, "V'samachta yadcha alav," place your hand on him as you appoint him as the next leader. And when Moshe does it, he puts both his hands on Yoshua. And from here we learn how a healthy parent and a healthy teacher should view their child or their disciple. The Talmud says, in a healthy relationship, a person is not jealous of their own son or their own disciple, because a person wants them to be better than themselves. He doesn't say, hey, don't do better than me, you know. It's good enough the way I did it. You know, if I could keep Shabbos and have the TV on a Shabbos clock, you can do the same thing. And the kid comes home and says, Dad, you know, that's not exactly the spirit of Shabbos I learned about. Maybe we could do something else. Maybe I could be in the room where the TV's not running on Shabbos. And the parent says, hey, yeah, yeah, if it's good enough for me, why isn't it good enough for you? It doesn't work that way. You want your kids to grow from where you're holding. Now, there are parents who tell their children, I am your minimum, not your maximum. I want you to grow from where I am. We should aspire, in a healthy relationship, we should aspire that our kids should be greater than ourselves. There's a beautiful story about a guy who decided he's going to climb a very high mountain, very rigorous, and it was well known that not everyone could do it, and he decided he wants to do it. So he trains for half a year and he gets the gear. He's working very hard and he plans it. And finally, the time comes and he starts making the trek. It's the weather's right and he's feeling good and he has all the equipment he needs. And he's told that at the top there's a beautiful view and there's this large landscape and you could spend months up there just looking at the beauty from those heights. So he's well prepared. He takes his knapsacks and he starts climbing. And after a few weeks, he's finally reaching the point where he could see the top. And day by day, he's dreaming of how he's going to make it to the top. And finally, the day comes when he knows he's going to get to the top. And he's so excited, he's shivering. As he climbs the final hour, he's climbing and climbing, and he finally makes it. He hasn't had a normal shower in weeks. He makes it to the top, and he turns around, and he looks at the view. He just wants to see where he came from. He looks down the mountain, and he looks out, and he sees this gorgeous view. And as he's looking, he feels like, wow, this was worth it. It's so amazing. And he feels like he's the top of the world. He knows so many people have never made it to this point to see the beauty. And he's standing there thinking about everything he's done to get to this point, taking in the air, looking at the view, and suddenly he notices behind him there are sounds, there are voices. And he doesn't want to turn around. He still wants to take in, you know, his muscles are aching. And he thinks to himself, you know, not anyone could, not just anyone could climb up such a mountain. This is such a blessing. But he hears the noises behind him. So he turns around and he sees families and people and children. He looks at the children and he's in shock. He has to hold himself from falling back down the mountain. He walks over to the families and says, "You want to tell me those children climbed this mountain?" So the families look at him and they say, "No, no, no, they were born here. These children were born on top of the mountain. That's what we want to do for our kids. We've climbed. We don't want them to make the same track. They should be born where their starting point should be where we are, and we should aspire they should grow from where we are." And we see that in Moshe. God tells Moshe, "Put your hand on him and appoint him as the next leader." Moshe puts both his hands on him. He gives him a blessing with a whole heart. Our sages say, "Bakol Adam mitkane." Man can be jealous of everyone, chutz, except from mibno v'talmido, his own child and his disciple. In a healthy relationship, there should be no jealousy there. He should want him to grow and outdo him. So Moshe is told to take Yehoshua and stand him before the Kohen, Elazar, who is now the Kohen Gadol. Remember, Aaron passed away. So Elazar, his son, is now the Kohen Gadol. And one of the rights that a leader of Israel has is that he may ask the Kohen Gadol a question to present before God. So Moshe will bring Yehoshua to do that. And that's a sign of Yehoshua's taking the leadership and being responsible. And the people will know that he will call the shots. He will decide when they go out to war, when they settle. The people of Israel and Elazar has to know that. And Moshe does that. And that brings us to Chamishi. And now the conclusion of the parasha is a recounting of the mitzvos of the sacrifices of every day, and the sacrifices of Shabbos, and the sacrifices of Rosh Chodesh, and the sacrifices of the holidays. And we read from Parshas Pinchas every holiday, because we're reading the sacrifices that are brought on each day. And that's the conclusion of the parasha. Maybe we'll quickly go through it. So every day there would be a sacrifice, every day of the year except which day. The Karban Tamid was brought every morning and every afternoon, except which day of the year. So the answer is no day of the year. Every day of the year, including Shabbat, Yom Kippur, Rosh Chodesh, every day of the year was brought a Karban Tamid. Consistent. Every day.
Same Koban.
Every morning, every afternoon. The service in the temple would begin with the Tamid and would end with the Tamid. Tamid Shel Shachar would start the service. Tamid Shel Ben Albayim would conclude. Yes?
There's one question which is burning on the tip of my tongue. Maybe it could be a very stupid, simple question. It's forbidden to light fire on Shabbat.
Right.
But there was a sacrifice every day.
Right. That's what the Torah is saying. And when the Torah says, you're right, the Torah tells us on Shabbat, we bring it. You'll notice in every sacrifice, on the Shabbat sacrifice, look at the Shabbat sacrifice, Pasuk Yud, it says, Olat Shabbat b'Shabbato, the Shabbat sacrifice should be brought every Shabbat, Al Olat HaTamid, on top of the steady Ola that's brought every morning and every afternoon. Yeah. We move forward, the Rosh Chodesh sacrifice, it says...
Lighting fire on Shabbat. They need to light fire for the sacrifice.
Right. That was permitted. The Torah permits that. Again, with the Rosh Chodesh sacrifice, Al Olat HaTamid, on top of the Tamid sacrifice. And you move forward, the sacrifice of Pesach, it says, Milvad Olat HaBoker Shol Olat HaTamid, aside from the Tamid sacrifice, Al Olat HaTamid Yaseh, do it on top of the Tamid sacrifice. Now you come to Shavuos, same thing. Milvad Olat HaTamid, do the Shavuot sacrifice other than the sacrifice of every day. You said, what about Yom Kippur? We run forward to Yom Kippur, and it says, Milvad Chatat Kippurim Ve'Olat HaTamid, these are the sacrifices other than the sacrifice that you learned elsewhere, and the Karban Tamid. Every day of the year, the Tamid has to be brought. Every morning, every afternoon. And there's a famous Medrash, it was made famous by the Ein Yaakov. He quotes it in the introduction to the Ein Yaakov, where they asked which pasuk encapsulizes the whole Torah. And one opinion there says the pasuk of the Karban Tamid, that it encompasses, which pasuk is the pasuk that that tells us the message of the Torah. One opinion says that the Karban Tamid, the mitzvah of the Karban Tamid, that's the pasuk that covers it all. What's so special? So the common explanation is that the idea of consistency. Torah isn't just get hyped, get excited, do it. Oh, feels great, wonderful. Been there, done that, on to the next show. No. Torah is about consistent growth. You can't just come in, get excited, do it for a month, a year, two, and then move on in life. There's consistency and slow and steady, because this is a path for life. It's a system for life. So that's the common explanation as to why this is so important. The pasuk of the Karban Tamid, because it means every day of the year. And that's why I'm a fan of learning Daf Yomi. Because the average person comes into Shabbos and figures, I'm going to rest. He walks into Yom Kippur, he figures, I'm going to pray. A guy who learns Daf Yomi walks into Shabbos and asks himself, how am I getting my Daf done? He walks into Yom Kippur and says, when am I going to get that Daf done? The idea that you do Daf Yomi every day of the year, you learn a Daf, that means that every day of the year you're learning. Mm-hmm. So people say, I'm not up to that yet. Yeah, I understand that. But get there. If you're not there yet, get there. And people will say, but you learn so much so fast, you forget it. No, you end up knowing a tremendous amount, and you end up learning a tremendous amount. So in the long run, you should try to do Daf Yomi. That way you also learn every day, and eventually you do cover Shas. Okay, so that's our parsha in a nutshell. Now we could see a few more points in depth. Okay. Okay.